The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
Do you remember Michael Wolff? He's the journalist, quote unquote, who hung out in the lobby of the White House until he gathered enough dirt to write Fire and Fury. Well, he's been on an international book tour to promote that book. And things have not gone so well for him as they did here in the U.S., during an interview with an Australian TV news show, Wolf was asked about his recent comment to Bill Maher, saying that he was absolutely sure that President Trump is currently having an affair. Wolf was doing the interview from London, and he suddenly claimed he couldn't hear the Australian interview's question because something was wrong with his audio connection, which is weird. Sometimes happens. Sometimes doesn't. Later, the Australian news show posted the footage from their London studio showing that there were no audio problems. So probably sometimes it doesn't was what really happened here. He just didn't want to answer the question. When Wolf was on Bill Maher's show, he encouraged the audience to read between the lines of a passage in Fire and Fury where he includes suggestive language about Trump and U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley. Okay. So when the British TV interviewer tried to clarify Wolf's innuendo about Trump, Haley, and other possible affairs, Wolf said, and I quote, "I assume. I assume because this is Donald Trump, and I think it's, you know, absolutely a fair assumption," end quote. Well, gosh, I'm pretty sure that that's one of the first things they should be teaching in journalism school, to never assume anything, because it makes an... I don't need to say it, do I? Well, no, for Wolf, I do. It makes an ass out of you and me if I went along. Even when it involves Donald Trump, you shouldn't assume. Wolf stands by his own journalism, though, saying there's no difference between the journalism in Fire and Fury and books by Bob Woodward. Really? So what is Michael Wolf hoping to accomplish here besides racking up book sales? Well, after a rough few days of being asked uncomfortable questions by European journalists who didn't have a dog in the fight, they just had real journalistic questions for him, Wolf has had enough of the heat. He canceled a BBC interview yesterday saying, the tour has just taken a toll. I'm sure it has. Probably less on your body and more on your reputation. Assumptions by the left and the right about each other. Those are taking a toll on us. We have pulled up an anchor of reason, and we are sailing straight into choppy waters of accusation, innuendos, and out-and-out lies about both sides. Let me make a plea. Could we try it for a day to stop assuming the worst about each other? For instance, we just did a monologue on Dick's Sporting Goods. I don't think the worst of them. I don't. I think they're reasonable people that feel that they're doing the reasonably right thing, and they have a right to do it. I just think they're wrong. But I don't want to see Dick's go out of business. I think they will eventually because of this, but I think that's because they're out of step. But you know what? Maybe I'm out of step. Maybe I don't know what America is anymore. But here's the thing. We have to stop hating each other and assuming the worst. We have to work to fix reason firmly in her seat. And yes, question with boldness. But question honestly and have an open mind where if you hear a new fact, you're like, okay, I didn't know that. Let me look into it. And let it risk enough that you might change your mind if there's a good enough case of reason. Question, but pursue the truth. And let's stop pursuing just a win for our team. We need a lot less fire and fury and a lot more honor and humility.
It's Wednesday, February 28th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, you just want to read a good book. I'm reading a couple of books right now that make my head hurt. I tweeted last night, don't just read Jordan Peterson's book, The 12 Rules to Live By. Listen to it. I've read it, and now I'm listening to the audio version. You can tell he's crying at parts of it, and it says so much about him. I have so much more respect for him. I've read the book. Listen to it, and it takes on a whole different, deeper meaning. But I'm reading that, and I'm reading another one about the Enlightenment, and do you ever just want to just curl up with a good book and just feel good? There is a new book out by Mark Weinberg. The name of the book is Movie Nights with the Reagans. Here's a guy who worked with the Reagans all the way through the White House years and then beyond, and would go to Camp David on the weekends and watch movies. Now they're all classic movies, and learned a lot about the Reagans and life, and has put it in a new book, Movie Nights with the Reagans. Mark, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. So when you were going to Camp David, I mean, first of all, let's just talk. What was it like to be, I mean, I don't know if you would classify yourself as a friend, because you're probably too humble, but what was it like to be in the friend zone with Ronald Reagan?
It was an honor to work for the Reagans, and it was a special treat to go with them to Camp David on weekends and watch movies. And this book brings that picture of them to the reader. It's a picture that hadn't been seen before, and I was very excited to share it with everybody.
So tell me about the most memorable, because you go through, and it's such a great way to read this book. You go through the movies that you saw with them. So every chapter is a different movie. 9 to 5, Oh God, Book 2, Raiders of the Lost Ark, On Golden Pond, Chariots of Fire, Top Gun, Untouchables. So what did you learn in each of these, and what are your favorite memories?
Well, the most important memory, I guess, is how important movies were to the Reagans. You know, I point out in this book that the movie business is where they came from, where Nancy Reagan and Ronald Reagan met, and their lives began together, and it formed the basis of everything in their adult life, essentially, and taught him some very valuable skills about how to lead the nation. And I think the book is a gentle reminder of the kindness of Ronald Reagan and his love for movies. I think there's a nostalgia now for him, even on the left, for people who didn't agree with him, because he had a way of appreciating what unified us. And in the 1980s, movies were one of those things. There were some amazingly important and impactful and entertaining films of the 80s, and how the Reagans reacted to them was something I was very privileged to see and very excited to share with people.
So let's talk about the reaction some. For instance, you say that War Games may have influenced Ronald Reagan on his nuclear policy. Tell me about that.
I remember watching War Games, and what I remember most about it is that usually after the movies at Camp David in their lodge, Aspen Lodge, there would be a very robust discussion of the movie, what people thought and how the movie was made. And the president, Mrs. Reagan, would share stories, many of which are in this book, about behind the scenes of Hollywood, and regale us. After War Games, it was oddly silent. It was what I would call a sobering movie, because it introduced the possibility that by accident there could be a nuclear war. And as you know, Ronald Reagan was unalterably committed to keeping the world safe and free from that threat. And I think this really made him think. Now, movies didn't form policy for him, but it certainly was one that made him think. And that silence in Aspen was very uncharacteristic. If you go through and read about the rest of the movies, as you know, you'll read that there's a lot of fun and interesting stories that they share and laughs and so forth. But this one was different.
So there was one other place that you say in the book was oddly silent, and it was after this line in Back to the Future. Listen.
Then tell me, future boy, Who's president of the United States in 1985?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan? The actor? Then who's vice president? Jerry Lewis.
I suppose Jane Wyman is a first lady.
Whoa, wait, Doc.
And Jack Benny is secretary of the treasury.
Doc, you gotta listen to me.
I got enough practical jokes for one evening.
Okay, stop. I think this is such a funny scene. And you describe this as, you know, the laughter was there until, I suppose, the first lady is Jane Wyman.
You could hear the oxygen go out of the room because that was a name that just wasn't mentioned. And some of us exchanged worried glances. No one said anything. Mrs. Reagan clearly heard it. Movie ended, and it was a funny movie. The Reagans laughed through most of it, and we didn't quite know what to say. But someone broke the silence by saying something about Jack Benny because he was a friend of the Reagans and just had a nice conversation. It never came up again. And I had an interview with Mrs. Reagan before she passed away. It was her last interview, actually, as far as I know, at her home in Los Angeles. And we talked about the movies that we watched at Camp David, and she was very excited about the fact that I was going to share this story because this is a side of them that had never been written about and was so special to them watching the movies. And I brought up what some of the favorite memories were, and I brought that back up, but did not mention the Wyman name. I also tell a story in this book, without giving it away, about the only other time I heard Jane Wyman's name, and that was from Ronald Reagan's own mouth.
Let me ask you about 9 to 5. You say 9 to 5 angered the Reagans and actually was the reason or was one of the motivating reasons for such an active campaign with Nancy Reagan on Just Say No to Drugs.
Yes. You know, that was an almost favorite. And in fact, it was the first movie I saw with them in this surreal atmosphere at Camp David, and it was a very entertaining movie. Jane Fonda notwithstanding, it was an entertaining movie. But what turned the Reagans off to it was the glamorization of marijuana. There was a scene where the three women smoked marijuana, and that turned them off. And in researching this book, I went back and read President Reagan's personal handwritten diaries. And he wrote in there that scene made him angry, that it wasn't necessary, that if perhaps they had been drinking, which was legal, marijuana was not, that might have been okay. And Mrs. Reagan was bothered by it, and in fact, in one of her speeches as part of the Just Say No campaign, even referred to it, that when you glamorize or glorify these bad habits, you're not doing kids any favor, and I think it made them mad at Hollywood.
So, you know, as I'm reading your book, there's pictures in the middle of it, and there's a picture of you on the tarmac. It is such an amazing shot. You're on the tarmac, and Marine One is behind you, the helicopter, and there is a wired desk telephone that had been taped down onto the tarmac, brought out to you, and you're on this rotary dial phone on the tarmac. Things were so radically different back then.
They were different back then. There was no internet. There was no cable TV. There were not cell phones. We used something called typewriters. And one of the things I hope this book does is take people down that memory lane of the 80s, which
it
I
does.
Think was a wonderful time
it does.
In American history. But you're right. It was different times.
Before we ask, Stu has a question that if you're a big Stu fan, you know what the question is going to be. But can you just describe, you're at Camp David. This is a place that, you know, the last two presidents haven't really liked. It's very quiet and old school. Explain what the room was like and how these movies were shown.
The Reagans loved Camp David because they could just be themselves. They were just the Reagans. There was no press. There was no anything around. It was as close to normal as they could get in their circumstances. And that's why she and he cherished it so much. That's why she was so happy to talk to me about it. And that's why I wanted to write about it, because it had not been revealed before. Their home at Camp David was a modest three-bedroom ranch-style home called Aspen Lodge. It was in the living room of that home where we watched the movies while they sat on a couch.
Wow.
A screen came down from the ceiling, a projection room at the back of the dining area in that house, and a window through which the movies were shown, reel-to-reel like in a theater.
The old days.
They loved Camp David because they could relax and be private. There's a story in there about some hijinks of the Secret Service. Yeah. They just like to exhale together.
So we have 1 minute, Stu.
Since I was about 9 years old, Mark, I was fully convinced that Rocky IV ended the Cold War. They actually did watch Rocky IV. What did they think of it?
He liked the fact that the American won.
Yeah.
that never bothered Ronald Reagan. As you go through this book, you'll find that these pro-military ones are the ones that really appealed to him the most.
Yeah, wow. Mark Weinberg, the name of the book is Movie Nights with the Reagans. It is a refreshing break that you will really enjoy. Movie Nights with the Reagans, available in bookstores everywhere.
Glenn Beck.
When you start to Mark Weinberg, his book Movie Nights with the Reagans, which is really one cool thing about it, is taking these moments of history, like the Challenger explosion, yeah. and what were they doing around it. It's really interesting from history and really pop culture history yeah. as well.
Also a good break.
It's just a nice break. Yeah, yes. exactly. At one point, however, I do want to ask you about something from that interview. You mentioned that Mark might not want to call the Reagans friends, which is something that you do all the time. Like when you're pretty much friends with someone, but you don't want to be.
I don't want to claim to be friends with people who are
famous.
Look, yeah. I mean, Michael Bublé is a good example. Are Michael Bublé and I, are we friends? No. If we're in a room together, we see each other, he's come up to me. I didn't even see him, and we were in a hotel lobby together, and he's like, hey, Glenn. So we're...
And you'll hang out and you'll talk.
Yeah, we'll talk and we'll have laughs, but we're not friends.
You're not vacationing together three times a year.
Yeah, and so I think it's always important to differentiate between friends and...
Right. Well, you don't want to come off as a guy who's a name dropper.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, he's a friend of mine. No, he's really not.
Right, I understand. I understand why you use that and why you said that to Mark. However, then you defined what he was with Ronald Reagan as the friend zone, which is not what that term means.
Please tell me it doesn't mean like friends with benefits.
Well, I would say what it means is you are a friend with someone and you want to hook up with them or have more.
Okay.
And they are like, they're keeping you in a friend area. They're not allowing you to cross the line that you want to cross. Now, I don't know Mark that well, but I don't think that was his desire.
No, and that was not my intent of defining their relationship.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I was sitting in the movie theater. And I was looking at Nancy, going, "I'd like a slice of that pie, but Ronnie's looking pretty good in this light, too.
But I can only stay in the friend zone." Biggest regret of my life right there.
I should have made a move when I had a chance.
The book, though, is interesting from the perspective of pop culture as well. There's been multiple documentaries, for example, and books written about Back to the Future and the history of how that movie was made. And I mean, tons has been written about that. I have never heard the anecdote that the Reagans were watching that movie. It talks about how they loved Michael J. Fox because he played Alex P. Keaton, who was a cool young Republican on TV.
Yeah.
And then the Jane Wyman thing where the room fell silent, I don't think I've ever heard.
Yeah, really good stories, and it's a good break from the nonsense. It'll take you back to something I want to talk about next. Better days?
Glenn Beck. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Can we just take a let's take a second here and get out of the nonsense, the stuff that just really doesn't matter in the end, and let's look at what matters most, and that's us and each other and our fellow countrymen and our children. You know, if you feed yourself with this garbage every day, like I have for the last 20 years, you can become cynical. You can become very cynical. And you can start to believe things that aren't necessarily true about each other, but about our own lives. You know, I've we were talking about this book, Movie Nights with the Reagans, which is a great read, and it'll just kind of take you back to a simpler time. Was it? Was it really? I mean, I think our lives were simpler because we didn't have Federal Express. We didn't, I mean, remember Federal Express at the time was turned down by I don't know how many banks because they said nobody needs a document overnight. Now it's like, I need it right now. So our lives were simpler then, but was it really any better? I mean, I remember during the Reagan years, I remember working in the nation's capital thinking, I'm at ground zero. We could be vaporized. I remember having the nightmares as a kid of, you know, those missiles flying over the pole from Russia. I mean, it was a real fear. We don't have that now. Yes, we have terror. We have North Korea. We have Russia. But is it any worse, really, than being vaporized, the entire world being vaporized? I don't think so. If you look at what our life, think of this, and I'll get into the stats here in a second. Stu, just take note on some of these stats. Homelessness since the 1980s, down. Violent crime, down, dramatically down. And look this stat up. School shootings, actually down. Death of children, the needless death of children, the mortality rate, hunger, access to education. And I mean access by everybody. You're in the jungle with a smartphone. Access to knowledge, to banking institutions, to markets, to be able to make something yourself and sell it. The freedom to speak and actually be heard. These are all things of our day, not of the 1980s. And so before we throw the baby out with the bathwater, let's recognize that there is a baby there. You know what? The only thing that I could think of that I think is really what we mean when a simpler time is we had faith in each other. We trusted each other. We trusted the stranger. We trusted that you're an American. We're all in this together. We're going to disagree and argue back and forth, but we're in it together. That's the only thing that has really taken our quality of life and put it down the crapper. Is we don't have faith in our institutions, which in some ways, maybe we shouldn't have so much faith. We shouldn't have blind faith in those institutions. So maybe that's even good. But losing our faith in each other is I think, the biggest loss of anything in my life that I have witnessed happen. We have to regain that.
Now, I'm not convinced that if social media exists in the 80s, that we would be any better. Things would have been the same way.
I agree with you.
You know, I mean, I agree. I think a lot of times we tend to remember the things that we like and mm-hmm. delete the things that we didn't like sure. from the past. We romanticize it a bit. Plus, you know, there's a general tendency to do that. I mean, you're going to do that as a human being, but then in it, you're also going to delete things that didn't matter. And a lot, we have to remember that a lot of these fights that we have on a daily basis, on a weekly basis,
don't matter.
Just don't matter. We were talking about this yesterday. Can you even remember what the political battle was 3 weeks ago? Jared Kushner is in the news today. You think that's going to be an issue in 2 weeks? Like, these things are so fleeting and meaningless so often. And if you go back to those times, I think you just don't even remember them. I mean, you know, Ronald Reagan was in the midst of a lot of vicious battles and attacks from the media.
But it was only covered 30 minutes a day on three channels.
Yeah. It wasn't all encompassing.
It wasn't every day picking apart everything that was happening.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you look at some of the stats you mentioned, you know, violent crime rate in the United States has dropped by about 50%.
50%
in half.
50. And we are looking at ourselves and we're saying, oh, we're living in such dangerous times. It's down by 50% since I was in high school. That's incredible.
Incredible. And if you listen to this show at all, you know that every time there's one of these, like, we must do something moments, I'm usually a skeptic of them. I am usually a skeptic of any Like, you know, the shark attack phenomenon. Oh, yeah, well, there's going to shark attacks. Oh, and then you look at it 2 months later, you're like, wait a minute, there was no increase in shark attacks at all. It just was a media
phenomenon.
You're
a numbers guy. That's what I love. Yeah. You're so deeply rooted in numbers and stats that very few things affect you because you're like, actually, no.
Yeah, I tried to do that. That's, right. You know, I don't get emotional about those things. Mm-hmm. And I think you wind up finding out when you look at the real information, a lot of times it tells a different story. Now, even I, in that position, was shocked reading this today from Northeastern University. Here's the headline. Schools are safer than they were in the 90s. That's not a huge shock because the crime rate's down. But school shootings are not more common than they used to be. They go through stat after stat. They show the charts, mass murders, 2000, going back all the way to the 90s. School shootings and mass shootings, 1992 through 2015, I mean, an absolutely noticeable decline in the amount of mass shootings and school shootings. Students killed per million in fatal school shootings from 1992 through 2015 is when the study shows, have dropped by 80%.
Wait, say that again.
Students killed per million, so that's a rate, right? We're not talking about a raw number. We're talking about the rate of killing. Students killed per million in fatal shootings from the 90s to today has dropped by about 80%.
It's just happening in mass. That's, I guess, the
but
difference.
Even mass shootings, have gone down. Incidents per year down.
Question with boldness. Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Go ahead.
Would that make a case for the gun-free zone? Because in the 90s is when they put that in.
I mean, it's hard to make that case given the stat we've talked about many times that over 98% of mass shootings have
only
happened
two in since 1950.
In gun-free zones. So it's hard to imagine that that is the factor there. Let's get that
to John Lott.
It's always worth looking at.
Yeah, right? Let's look at that.
It's always worth looking at.
I mean, what are the other things that have changed that?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing, and this is why this is kind of the genesis of this conversation that we started having during the break, is that a lot of times we focus on little things that enrage us or inflame us on a daily basis, and we lose track of the bigger, larger trends that are much more important. As you pointed out, we were on the verge of nuclear holocaust through this period we were just reminiscing about, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And now with crime rates down and with, I mean, even if you believe the world is unstable as we do, and there are a lot of risks out there, geopolitical and otherwise, you have to know that there's been a giant reduction in nuclear weapons worldwide. The fact that Russia is no longer, or the Soviet Union, it does no longer exist with the amount of nuclear weapons that they had, while still dangerous, is a certain improvement. The fact that they are weaker than they were at their peak is an improvement. We have downgraded the amount of nuclear weapons that we have. I mean, they built the Tsar Bomba back in the day, the biggest nuclear weapon ever. It was like 50 times the biggest that we ever made. And they actually tested it. Now we're talking about lower yields and more, even in the nuclear realm, we've improved quite a bit. But some of these improvements are absolute knock your socks off. Worldwide, since 1990, there has been a 53% drop in the amount of children dying before age 5. A 53% drop. This started after Reagan, right? It used to be 17,000 kids that were dying every day that today don't die, that live. Because I would argue large scale capitalism spreading throughout the world and improving life.
Let me share something. I was sick a couple of weeks ago and I had the flu, and this was the worst flu I've ever had. I mean, it was diabolical. I mean, it ran through our family. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to demonize the flu. I don't even want to say it was bad. It was wrong.
Right.
But everybody in the family was sick. We were all in bed. And I've never experienced something this violent before. And so I was thinking, my gosh, we're all down. And I started thinking, you know, typical Glenn Beck thinking, imagine the Spanish flu of 1918.
Oh, my gosh.
Where I think it was a third of the population died. A third. Imagine how weird that was. I was out with a friend on Monday, and I said, how's the family doing? Because they've been down for about a week and a half. Everybody is sick, and his wife is sick. And he said, Glenn, this is the first time in my life I've ever actually thought of, wow, what was it like when people just get the flu and just die?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of that. We don't really even, people still die from the flu, but it's not something that goes through your head.
It's you don't even consider it. It's unthinkable when it happens. But give me this again, 17 kids died in this shooting, and it's an incredibly big deal. It's not a small deal. We should absolutely try to solve those problems. But in this span, we've been talking about this, five times as many kids in the United States have died from the flu. 85 kids, this is as of last week, had died in this flu season from the flu, which has been a really bad flu season. And while it's absolutely vitally important that every one of these lives matters, we have to put it in perspective and realize how good things have gotten on this point, Glenn. I was talking about with all these kids that used to die that now live. That number is over 6 million kids worldwide that would die in 1990 and live today. But when you ask people, has poverty gotten better or worse? 70% of people say it's gotten worse. 70% think it's gotten worse. This is an incredible achievement. Probably the biggest achievement any of us will ever even consider. You're saving 6 million people per year, and that's just children. And we totally ignore it, and we romanticize past eras. So the big things have gotten much better, but you're right. There is that constant angst that seems to just never go away, and it makes us feel a lot worse.
I think it's because of, and I'm not blaming it on social media, I'm saying it is leading us to view things with distorted vision. We compare ourselves to other people. We compare ourselves to a better lifestyle. We are constantly thrust into left-right discussions, them versus us. It's not good for a society. And if we can, let me finish where I started. We have to work hard. We did not think about dividing ourselves and plan on how to divide ourselves. I think others may have, Russia, but we didn't. But it is going to require all of us to think, how do we repair this? And if we can just find basic faith and goodwill in each other, we're going to be okay.
Selling your house can be a nightmare because sometimes you have an agent who's not getting it done, honestly. You know, you need someone who's on top of it all the time. You need someone who has a great marketing plan. You need someone who knows the local area, what the price should actually be. You need someone who's going to make sure that they communicate with you and make sure that you know all the details of what's going on, not to mention the person who is going to be competent in dealing with all the paperwork and all that stuff, you know, for the most important financial transaction of your life. What you need is realestateagentsitrust.com. Realestateagentsitrust.com is a website that sorts through everybody for you. There's 1,200 agents all over America, so you're going to find the best agent in your area. And if you need to sell a house fast and for the most money, if you're looking to buy, whatever you're looking to do, go to realestateagentsitrust.com. You're going to be introduced to the best agent in your area that can help walk you through the transaction. Let the agents earn your business. Get moving with realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck.
I'm having a really hard time with this stat that school shootings and mass shootings are even down from. I can't get my arms around this.
I can't either. I was, again, stunned to read this today. Again, it's for Northeastern University. They talk about they have all the research posted. I'll tweet it again from at World of Stew, and we'll get it from at Glenn Beck as well. But they show all the charts, and this is, again, they don't necessarily agree with all of our solutions either. It's not like a conservative study that's trying to defend our positions. But, you know, back in the early 90s, it was as high as about, trying to read a chart here, but about 30 incidents per year. And again, they mass school shootings multiple victim school shootings and fatal school shootings. They cover all three of them. And most of them, of course, are just fatal school shootings, which are, you know, one person. But it goes down. It was, you know, up around 35, and now it's down to around 5 per year.
Unbelievable. We'll really delve into this later on The Blaze TV and more tomorrow.
What do you mean?
Glenn Beck. Mercury.
I love